Fan Junkies Radio is brought to you by FanJunkies.net, where sports meet social networking.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's me, Jonathan Ragus. I'm back. Mike's not hosting. Not this time. I'm back for my little holiday here. But you know what? Welcome to Fan Junkies Radio. It's a beautiful day. As always, Jonathan Ragus here. Alongside me, my good friend, Mike McShane. Mike, how you doing, pal?
Real good. Real good. How was your holiday, huh?
It was good. It was good. How was yours?
Yeah, no, it was very nice. Very nice. Nice long weekend. Lots of football in there. Had football all day on Thursday, then Saturday, all the college ball games, and then yesterday. Wow. Just a weekend full of sports and football.
Yeah, well, that's always a good weekend, right? Especially coming off Thanksgiving, because I don't know about you, but, you know, I eat a lot. You know, it's tough guy.
Yeah, and, you know, we held the fort down for you there on Friday.
Man, it was a good show. It was a good show.
Sidekick and I, yeah. We tried our best, you know.
Dave did a good job by, you know, I heard the Jaeger being drank.
Yeah, yes. We were talking all those Turkey Day games and what have you and the fallout from all those. So we had that covered.
It was good times.
Yeah, it was. It was a lot of fun.
Well,
so,
you know, big shout out to Sidekick. Thanks for filling in on Friday. Really appreciate it. So I could enjoy some family time.
There you go.
Went down to Jersey, hung out in Princeton for a little bit. Good times.
Very nice. Very nice.
Got a good show today. Joining us in a little bit is former NBA player and current New Orleans Hornets scout, Chucky Brown. Good guy. And everybody's going to hear what a good guy he is when he calls in at around the 12:15 mark.
Uh-huh.
Definitely looking forward to that. But before we get started anything, I just, you know, Mike, myself, we want to send out our prayers and condolences to Kevin McHale and his family over the loss of his daughter.
Wow.
Over the weekend. She passed away at the age of 23, and you know, terrible tragedy, you know, when anybody passes away that young. And, you know, once again, our condolences and prayers out to Kevin, his wife, and the rest of their family and friends.
You know, you got to give it to a guy like Kevin McHale. He's a class act. He really is.
Yeah, he is.
You know, that came as such a shock to me because, you know, he kept it very, very private.
Yes.
And
He's always been pretty much of a private guy. So
yeah, what a tragedy and what a sad situation. But you really, really got to give him high praise for, you know, keeping things separate, you know, and keeping them out of the media and what have you. So
yeah. His daughter Alexandra, from what I was reading earlier today, was she's been you know, a long sufferer from lupus, and was hospitalized, I guess, in the beginning of November, with a condition that was spurred on by the autoimmune disease lupus. So,
yep.
You know, real shame. You know, the Minnesota Timberwolves put out a really nice statement saying that they were able to watch Alexandra grow up and, you know, to become the wonderful woman that she was. And, you know, I just can't imagine what Kevin McHale and his family are going through right now.
Yeah, really.
And I don't ever want to. You know?
No. So, absolutely. That's a great place to start the show.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Mike. You know what? You sent me a really cool story today.
Yeah.
Giants tight end Martellus Bennett basically turned into a superhero. I mean, honestly, you would have to say he turned into a superhero during the Green Bay Packers game yesterday.
Yeah.
He's, you know, going into the locker room, he's throwing up his gloves, and what happens? A fan leans over the railing and falls.
Uh-huh.
And from a good height. And what does Martellus Bennett do? His spidey sense kicked in. He caught this fan and saved this fan's life.
Incredible.
Easily this person could have died or been seriously hurt.
Seriously injured, yes.
Because it was from such a good height, and the way they were falling, they could have easily broken their neck or something.
Yep.
You know, what an awesome story, especially coming right after Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, I wish there had been video coverage of it. It must have been awesome.
You know what? Somebody's got to have video, man, of it. I mean, it's 2012.
Yeah.
You know, come on.
You know, imagine you're going down the tunnel, and the next thing you know, you just put your arms out and catch a guy.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, You know, and you bring up a good point. That's we're planning on spending a good deal of Wednesday's show talking about fan behavior and things like that. And here's a situation where, you know, a feel good story like this, where you got a guy going out and helping a fan. I mean, this is just terrific story. You know, another one though that I was kind of touched by yesterday, Jonathan. I don't know whether you saw it or not. Was the Colts cheerleader?
No. I have no idea what you're talking about. So fill us in.
The Colts cheerleader, Megan. They only have her. They didn't list her last name. Who shaved her head in honor of Chuck Pagano, and then went out and cheered the whole time on the squad that whole game.
That's great.
And she raised, she said she would do it as a fundraiser. You know, raise money for cancer and things and cancer research. She ended up raising close to $25,000.
Wow, good for her.
Yeah,
good for her. That's awesome.
It was really, really, it was really kind of odd because we're sitting here watching the game. And, of course, you know, like as I've pointed out before, and as you well know, we'll sit here and we watch, you know, three games at a time. And so we don't always know exactly what all the background and detail is. And they, you know, the camera pans over and they show this Megan girl cheering on the sideline, completely shaved. And it's like, whoa. And then you find out the story there after the fact. And, it's another one of those, you know, so we had a couple of really good feel-good stories.
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. Like I said, you know, coming right after Thanksgiving, right before Christmas and the holiday season, I mean, you know, to have these feel-good stories is great because I hate to say it, you don't hear about these stories unless you really dig around.
Exactly.
And look for them, you know. It's like bad news is what, you know, everybody wants to put front and center. But yet you got the story about the Colts cheerleader, which I didn't even hear about until you told me just now, and then with the Martellus Bennett story yesterday.
Yeah.
Which is funny because Martellus Bennett, he went on to saying that, naturally he just wanted to step back, but he did the righteous thing, and he stepped up and caught him and saved his life. He tapped into his inner superhero, which he does have, he says.
Yeah.
He went on to say, and I quote, "I'm usually a ninja, but my spidey senses told me he was going to take a fall, so I saved his life. He owes me his firstborn or something." Actually, I don't want that. Maybe a sandwich or something.
Yeah.
How awesome is that?
A sandwich would be fine. Yeah. I think it's terrific. I think, you know, when you see, and like I said, we were talking a little bit, maybe on Wednesday, we're going to spend some time talking about, you know, fan behavior and what have you. And to read stories like this starts to make you at least have some confidence in where, you know, that there is some good that comes out of our sports behaviors. Let's put it that way.
Unfortunately, it's few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? So, you know, and then now getting over to our next thing that we wanted to talk about. And, you know, I'm sure we're going to mention this on Wednesday show. You know, on Wednesday, Mike and me, we're going to do a big show based on fan behavior over a couple of stories that just happened. You know, last night, one thing broke with the New York Jets. I'm sure you all know about that by now, but we're going to talk about that on Wednesday and fan behavior based around that kind of stuff. But last night in the Bengals-Raiders game, three players were ejected. A huge brawl ensued. You know, Lamar Houston, he took, Andy Dalton of the Bengals. He basically just slammed him down way after the whistle, Mike.
Yep.
Way after the whistle.
Yep.
And, and I'm happy to say this, but Cincinnati tackle Andrew Whitworth, he went after Houston. Good for him. Protect your quarterback.
Absolutely.
You know, especially with garbage like that. So Lamar Houston turns into a thug last night. And because of that, a whole brawl ensues. But then, Mike, you said that you actually saw two Raiders players being escorted off the field by police.
Well, right. The two that actually were ultimately ejected, which was it Houston and Whitworth?
Yeah, Houston and Whitworth were ejected.
As well
as who else was ejected? Somebody else was ejected.
Well, one of the Cincinnati Bengals was ejected.
Yeah, Kelly was ejected.
Exactly. Now we're watching it, and I'm almost positive the game is being played in Cincinnati, and I think that probably what the case was, Houston and Whitworth were escorted off police escort, probably more for their own security, because I think the concern was as they left the field they could have been pelted from the fans, you know, with whatever was in their hands. So it was probably more just as their own, for their own protection, they were escorted out of the playing field. But it was a horrible display. I mean, look, we have all seen situations where things get a little rough. You know, you get a couple of guys in pushing each other, you know, maybe after the whistle a little
bit.
It
happens.
You know, somebody hits somebody upside the head, slaps somebody upside the head. You know, if you saw this video, Jonathan, I think when I sent it over to you this morning, there was video attached to it.
Yeah, I actually saw it live yesterday, believe it or
not.
Okay. I didn't see the guys being, you know, taken off the field by police, but I did see it.
Well, when you watch this video, this is a prolonged situation. I mean, they are in... I mean, you know, it was worse than a rugby scrum. I mean, let's get it straight. You know, people are being thrown around. I mean, it was a pretty nasty display of really lack of sportsmanship.
Yes.
All caused, as you point out, by an unnecessary roughness situation on Andy Dalton. I mean, you know, there was no reason.
Well,
him to be hit that hard.
Exactly. If you watch what Lamar Houston did, I mean, way after the whistle kept blowing. He still continued to grab Dalton and slam him to the turf. He got up and walked off like a complete thug.
Yeah.
You know, he got up and he walked off like, yeah, whatever, I got your quarterback, you know?
Well, right. I mean, it almost appeared he had his chest puffed out, like as if
yes.
he
was proud of what he did.
Exactly.
It's funny, though, because Chris Chase from USA Today wrote on the article about this. It said that it took three Raiders to hold back Kelly, which makes sense because Oakland can't defend anybody. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah. But, it was uncalled for. But then what was uncalled for as well. And, look, like I said, I can see and I can understand. Look, it's a close contact sport. You know, tempers are going to get going. But for this to go on the way that it did there after the fact, you couldn't even get referees to break it up. Some of the guys, it looks like...
You're not going to get these old, scrawny referees to break up these big guys. You know what I mean? It's come on, man. You know what? Which is why I said when stuff like this happens, especially on a football field, I think there should be some people, some kind of security designated just for this.
Well, and it appears to me in the... and I'm surprised that there really actually weren't more penalties, but... It appears to me that some of the referees are actually made contact with by some of the players.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, you know, we're going to, as you just pointed out, we're going to be talking on Wednesday about fan behavior. And you got to wonder, when you see displays like this that are going on down on the field, well why wouldn't there be problems with fans?
Exactly. This is where it steps to. I mean, we're going to talk about this Wednesday, but let me just throw this out there. You know what? We still talk about how athletes are role models, whatever. There was a lot of kids in the stands yesterday.
Yeah.
No matter what. And this is what they're seeing. So they're going to go out now into their Pee Wee Football League. They're going to go out and play schoolyard football, whatever. And they're going to think, hey, if somebody does something rotten or something by accident to me, I could take it into my own hands.
Absolutely. And I couldn't agree with you more. How many times, you know, and I know that, you know, there have been a number of people, a number of athletes and what have you, who have made the statement before. I think Charles Barkley is actually one of them. Who has said, look, I am not a role model. I do not want to be a role model. Hey, you know something, whether you want it or not, whether you agree with it or not, accept the fact that you are.
Listen,
there are people that look up to you.
I'm sorry. You know what? If you're going to be any kind of professional athlete and you're going to be making money by kids trying to buy your jerseys, buying video games that you're a part of, you're a role model.
Exactly.
You may not want it, but you are. So that means you have to act like a decent human being. And to show these kids that, you know, what's right from wrong.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? No matter what, you become a parent, you're automatically a role model.
Right.
You know? So what's the difference? You know what I mean?
Well, and I used to have this, conversations very similar to that with parents because, as you know, I was a former teacher.
Yeah.
And we'll get into some of that on Wednesday.
Well, absolutely. But listen, we're going to stop talking about these rotten people. And we're going to get to a great person.
Yep.
As our guest is here. And, you know, awesome to say, we're joined by former NBA player and current New Orleans Hornets scout, Chucky Brown. How's it going, Chucky?
Everything is good, man. How you doing? I hope it's not too loud in the background here.
Not at all, man. You sound great.
Where are you at?
All right, well, thank you. I'm in Orlando at Universal Studios with my kids.
Oh, okay.
That's
wonderful.
Hey, listen, Chucky, you're not backing those teacups, are you?
Nah, they make me dizzy, man.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Chucky, you know what? Thanks for taking the time out from being on vacation with your family to call in and talk some basketball and other stuff with us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, that's no problem, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, man. Listen, like I said, it's a real honor because there was a few times, man, where I saw you toast my New York Knicks, and I said, man, that Chucky Brown, you know? It's best to just be talking to you, man, you know, because you're not toasting my Knicks no more, so.
Well, the Knicks, you know, the Knicks was one of my teams growing up, and I always wanted to play for them, so I figured if I had a good showing in the Garden, maybe they would call me for a job one day, but it never happened.
Well, you are from New York originally. What part of New York were you from?
Manhattan, Harlem, 147th Street, 7th Avenue, Esplanade Garden.
Nice. Listen, man, I'm a Queens product, man. I used to play ball at Lamar Odom, so, you know.
Okay, okay.
Man. Great stuff, man. All right, well, you know what, Chucky, let's talk a little bit about your NBA career first. You know, I'm going to bring it up, man. You played for 12 NBA teams.
Right, right. I'm not ashamed of it.
You know what, man? There's a lot of people that would hate to be known for that, but, I mean, you seem to really like to be known for that. I mean, there was even, a shot of you maybe signing with the Charlotte Bobcats last year or even early this year to see if you could.
See if I can break the record.
talk to us about that Pearlman story, because Pearlman actually had a story out there saying that you could have come down there and helped out Charlotte, and he was calling on you to be the savior.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I would have done it. I took it, you know, to have a job was good for me, because, you know, it's not often that everybody can't play in the NBA. So, you know, for me to be able to play in the NBA any way they wanted me to play, I was going to show up and play. And if the Bobcats would have called me, I could have given them about 10 or 15 minutes. I'm in pretty good shape. I need about five shots, so I can go 3 for 5 every night. I can still make a jumper, and that'll be about it. But as far as like running the floor every play, I couldn't do that anymore. I'm 44 now, so I couldn't run the floor hard every time, and I couldn't get you a dunk like that. And I could still dunk, but not like that.
Well, listen, man, listen, there's some players in the NBA now that still can't run the floor. So
yeah, you're right. You're right.
So why not, you know?
Here's the deal,
That's
though.
Right.
I love your confidence and the fact that you, you're saying, oh, no, man, I'll go out there. I can do it. I can't do all this, but I can give you this and this. I think that's
terrific. Well, I know how to play. I know how to play. You know, if you know how to play, you know when to get in the way and when to stay out of the way. So I know how to play basketball. So, I mean, it wouldn't be a problem getting back out there. The problem would be, you know, playing the full court game, you know, at my age. That would be a problem.
Hey, listen, man, you know what? I think you could do it, man. You actually lasted on the teacups.
Yeah, you're right. If I could last on them things, I could do anything.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. Oh.
If the knees are good enough to sit in there, I think you can handle the floor, can't you, huh?
Yeah, I can handle it, but just not too long. I think because you hadn't played at that level in so long that your body will be hurt.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, man. Listen, man, I'm 30 years old. I haven't played organized ball in a while. You know what? I run to half court, man. I feel like I'm going to die from an asthma attack. So,
I know the feeling.
You played a lot longer than me, and you played at a professional level. So, man, if you know, I feel you, man.
I know the feeling. Trust me.
Oh, man. So, Mike, man, you actually had a couple of questions for Chucky, man. Why don't you roll one of those off to him?
Yeah, Chucky, you're right now doing some scouting for New Orleans. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so my question really revolves around the whole concept of scouting in the NBA. And actually,
okay,
a couple of questions. Are you scouting – now, what is it that you're scouting? Are you just scouting developmental teams, or are you scouting the college ranks in preparation for, say, the draft coming up next spring?
Yeah, I'm scouting the college ranks, just looking for kids that everyone knows who's good. So, I mean, what you do is, as far as the scouting goes, you want to find out about a guy. You want to find out the character. You want to find out what he likes to eat. Does he like to go out? What does he like to do when he likes to go out? Does he have a girlfriend? Does he like girls? Does he like boys? Whatever. You know, you're just trying to find out the background information on a guy. because yeah. everyone knows who can play. And, you know, every now and then you'll find that guy, that one guy that no one knows about. But, you know, with the telecommunication stuff, you know, the Facebook, Twitter, and all this communication stuff, the media outlets, you know, everyone knows about everyone. So now you got to find out about the character. So everyone doesn't find out about the character of individuals.
So is that, I mean, you're placing a lot of emphasis on the whole character aspect. Are you actually
yeah.
finding yourself in stands and in stadiums across, you know, different regions, what have you, in, you know, watching these guys play when they're playing for, I don't know, whatever teams that you're scouting?
Yeah, you find yourself all over the place, especially in the preseason tournaments. But for the most part, I'm in the southeast area,
okay.
North Carolina down to pretty much Florida. I'm
okay.
in that region. But I was in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun for that tournament. So, I mean, I can find myself anywhere.
Right.
But my main region is the southeast region.
Now, I am a big NCAA basketball fan.
Okay.
of what you're seeing right now, who are the good teams? Now, give us an idea. Who can we expect coming out of the NCAA this year? Who's looking really good?
I think right now, even though it's still rather early, I think you got to look at Duke. Duke looks good. Michigan looks pretty good. I got a chance to watch Ohio State. I thought they looked. They may not have the most talent, but I thought they looked like a tough team that's going to be tough to beat. And it's going to be interesting to see Duke and Ohio State play. I think they play this week, tomorrow.
Yeah.
They play tomorrow. But that's going to be interesting to see because those are two of the top teams. And I think Louisville looked pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and I think Duke just beat them. but I think you have quite a few teams out there that look pretty good. I think it's going to be a wide open once the tournament starts because you can't predict injuries and, you know, how a player is feeling. You're not going to know what's going to happen once the tournament starts.
Okay. One other real quick one that I had for you. There was a report here. I'm actually from the Philadelphia region.
Uh-huh.
And there was a report out here. The 76ers were looking at purchasing a developmental team. In fact, a defunct one, I believe, out in the Utah area. How many basketball teams, how many NBA teams now are getting into the whole concept of developmental teams? And wouldn't that be the first place to be going, almost like a minor league?
Well, I know they're trying to get it to be like that. But I think that the fact that they don't have, like, when the developmental league first started, they had an age requirement. You couldn't be, like, over 25 and be a part of the developmental league. I think in order for them to use it as a farm system, they need to get back to doing something like that. Because if you have a guy that's 30 years old playing in a developmental league, I mean, what is he developing? What is he developing? Amnesia? I don't know. But there's not much. There's not much to develop. You know what I'm saying? Once you're 30, you're pretty developed. You're on the downside of your career, I think. So
yeah.
I think that they, for one thing, they need to get back to the age requirement as far as, you know, you can't be over 25. Because at 25, you're still developing as a player. You're still getting better. So once they do that, then it can be a true developmental league. I don't think it's really a true developmental league right now, and that's why – you know, guys, they look other places, really, to find players.
Do you think that that's the future? Is it moving in that direction?
I think it's moving in the direction of becoming more of a I think it's getting back to it because it was in the beginning. I think it's going to get back to being more developmentally because, I mean, like I said, you can't have – I mean, nothing against Antoine Walker. I mean, but Antoine Walker played in the developmental league last year.
Wow.
How can you have – you know, Antoine Walker playing in the developmental league. I mean, if you're interested in Antoine Walker, then you need to bring him in for a workout to make sure he's in shape, you know, to make sure, you know, those type of things. You know, you fly him in and do that, or he goes to, you know, teams or whatever and does that. Because for a guy like Antoine Walker to play in the developmental league, you know, it just shouldn't happen. And I like Antoine. I got no beef with Antoine. I mean, they let him play. But I'm just saying, it's not a true developmental league when you have 38-year-old guys playing in the developmental league. You know what I'm saying?
Good point.
Absolutely. But you know what? Not even that. I mean, you know, having a 38-year-old guy like Antoine Walker on the NBA D team, that's just taking away a spot from somebody who could potentially be an NBA player.
exactly. So, I mean, when you're doing stuff like that, I mean, you got young guys out there. You know, Antoine Walker has a big enough rep to where he can go overseas, you know, and the money is not as good as it was overseas. But he can go over there and make him some quick money and just come on back home. Yeah. Whereas a younger guy who's not established, it'll be much harder for him. Because you got guys like Stephon Marbury who you don't hear about, but he's over in China making a killing.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
You know, so I mean, the same thing could happen for a guy like Antoine Walker. He could do the same thing. But, I mean, a lot of guys don't want to leave. But, you know, I would take pleasure in leaving and going to see another culture and stuff like that. I think that would be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not even that. I mean, you know what? We even have rumors going around now that Michael Finley, 39 years old, is trying to make a comeback in the NBA. Now, is he going to be on the D team one day or what? You know, it's...
Nah, I don't think Finley would. Like I said, you know, a guy like Michael Finley, if a team is interested in a big guard that can shoot the ball, bring him in for a workout. Bring him in for a workout. And if he's in shape, you know, you sign him. Or you sign him when the 10-day contract start up, you sign him to a 10-day. You know, and I mean, that would be the smart way to do it. You know, that way you don't have to sign him for, you know, guaranteed money. And then, you know, if he happens to not show up like you think he could show up, then you don't have to cut him and then continue to pay him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know what, Chuck, let me ask you this, man. You played for 12 NBA teams. You coached and you were assistant coach in the NBA D League, and now you're a scout. So far, okay, which has been the toughest for you?
The toughest probably would be being in the D League with the travel and the hotels and, you know, just the small towns that you go to, and you're riding on the vans and it's cold and you don't have heat in your room. You got a heater. You know, that's probably the toughest. So, you know, the scouting thing is pretty easy. I just have to give my opinion on somebody. I could be wrong and I could keep my job. You know, so the scouting is easy. I'd much rather do the scouting, you know, but I enjoy the coaching because I enjoy sharing the things that I've learned throughout my career with players, and I just enjoy teaching and helping younger players grow, and it's fun to see them grow as players. So that's the part that I miss about coaching. But, you know, the part about scouting, you know, like I'm in Orlando now with my family. I mean, I couldn't do that. If I was coaching now, I'd be somewhere, you know, getting ready for a game. So, I mean, the scouting part, being with your family, you can't beat that. You can't beat it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, hey, listen, you're still close to the game, which – that's awesome, you know.
So, I mean, what else you want me to do? I've been around basketball for 25 years of my life.
Right.
You know, now what am I going to do, go into corporate America? They're not going to have me in corporate America. I got to do something around basketball, man.
Yeah.
That's what I've done all my life. So I never understood why a basketball guy, just like a guy like Patrick Ewing, why can't he find a coaching job? Why can't somebody hire him?
Yeah.
You know, I never understood that. You know, they hire a guy that hasn't played professional basketball in the pro ranks. So I think as far as that goes, now that's getting a little deeper. I think that, you know, the NBA and the players need to take care of, you know, the NBA players more. You know, like, you should never hear about, you know, basketball players going broke. I mean, you just basically hear the basketball and the football going broke and stuff like that. You should never hear about that. We should take care of each other better than that, because I'll tell you what, you never hear about a baseball player going broke. You have a baseball player do all the drugs, chase all the women, but he ain't never broke. You don't hear about it.
That's true.
I'm going a little deeper there. I didn't mean to fly off that end, but I'm just saying.
No, listen, man. Listen, I agree with you, man. And listen, if we weren't on the radio right now, I could get into some stuff, man, especially with the Knicks, man, that I don't agree with. So,
right?
You know, there's lots going on with that, man. I totally agree with you with that. But, you know, you mentioned before the Knicks were your team, man. You're on that Rockets team that knocked them out in 94. Thanks so much for that. I appreciate that, Junkie. I mean, that really broke my heart. now, was there ever any interest from the Knicks to you? I mean, you know, did you ever get to try out for the Knicks? I mean, did they ever contact you when you were a free agent?
Yeah, there actually was interest in the Knicks. I got released from San Antonio back in 2001, I think it was. And I was on waivers, and the Knicks had, I guess, contacted my agent, and they needed a guy. And I remember somebody sending me an article from the New York Post where my picture was in the Post, that the Knicks were waiting for me to clear waivers. And Charlotte claimed me off waivers, and because of the picking order or however that works, I had to go to Charlotte and couldn't go to New York. So I was a little crushed by that because I really wanted to go to the Knicks. And I saw Patrick Ewing during the season. And Pat was like, man, you know you're supposed to be here. I said, hey, I wanted to be there, but I couldn't. You know, I couldn't. You know, I guess I could have said, you know, I'm not going, you know, and just waited it out and played with Knicks. But I didn't know I had that option back then or I would have done that.
Man, that's that, man. We would have loved to have had you on the Knicks show. That would have been
awesome. I love New York. New York is my favorite city, and I tell people all the time, New York is the best city, hands down, over any city in the country. I don't care what you say, because New York never shuts down. The Big Apple never sleeps.
No, it doesn't.
I love New York, and I think it's the best city ever.
So basically, when you got to play for the Nets in 92, that was pretty cool then, right?
Oh, that was as close as I could get. I stayed in the city every day. I was in the city every day. So, so yeah, that was as close as I could get. I mean, I grew up with a lot of people. My cousins are still in New York. So, I mean, it was good for me to be there. And, you know, I still get to New York every now and then. And I bring my kids up there to show them where I grew up, you know, to show them my neighborhood. Even though it changed a lot, I still show them my neighborhood.
You have to, man. Yeah. You have to. You know, that's something that's instilled in you, man, and it'll never go away, man. You know what? Me and you were in the same place like that. That's awesome. So, listen, I have to ask you, though, man. You know what? You loved playing in Houston.
Right.
You know what? You were traded to Phoenix. How does it feel to be traded for a guy like Charles Barkley in the NBA Hall of Fame?
Hey, I felt good about it, even though I know that Phoenix didn't really care that I was in the deal. They wanted basically Sam and Robert. So I knew that they didn't really want me in that deal. And Rudy T had called me that day when I got traded and said that, my contract made the numbers work out. So, you know, I was like, cool, you know, thanks for the opportunity. And just, you know, I just went on the Phoenix. I mean, it felt good, though, to be traded for a Hall of Famer. felt good.
Right.
Absolutely. You know what, man? And you're also trading next to a guy, Robert Horry, who has, like, what, like 24 NBA rings now?
Yeah, so I was traded with Robert, too. So, I mean, that's great. I'm in great company.
Oh, man. That's awesome, man. So, listen, you know what? You're a scout now. Do you ever want to be a coach in the NBA?
Yeah, good question.
If the opportunity presented itself and the timing was right, yeah. But I just wouldn't not that I'm trying to be picky or anything, but I just wouldn't take any job just to say that, you know, I'm coaching in the NBA. It would definitely have to be a job that, that I felt like I could be successful and I felt like, you know, they were going to allow me the tools to be successful, because not every place, regardless of what people may think, not every place, I think, tries to be successful. You know, or they don't allow the coach the opportunity, or they don't give him the tools to be successful. Now, you look at, like, the Clippers, you know, the Miami Heat, you know, they're allowing their coaches, or they're giving them the tools to be successful. Now, if they're not successful, that's on the coach, and then you can him. You know what I'm saying? You can him, and you put him in the supermarket somewhere, and you get rid of him. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, Oklahoma City allows, you know, there's certain teams that allow, you know, they're people, they get at people and stuff to be successful with. And there's some teams that are looking at, you know, budgets and money. But, you know, like they always say in Vegas, you know, you got to spend money to make money.
Oh, absolutely. So, listen, man, Knicks call you tomorrow, man. They got an open spot on their bench. You taking it?
I'm chilling with Rasheed the whole time. I'm right there.
Well, listen, man, Rasheed's actually playing now, man, so you might be chilling with Amari because he's still on the end of the bench there doing nothing. So.
But Rasheed will be my hangout partner. I'll be hanging with Rasheed.
Why, man? Are you trying to say it because you guys are closer in age, so you got more in common or what?
Yeah, because we're closer in age. That's right.
Well, you got Marcus Camby there, too, man. So
Marcus, that's right. Marcus Camby. Me, Marcus Camby, and Rasheed can chill out together.
Well, listen, Junkie, man, I'm still a huge Knicks fan, man. I still follow him no matter where I am, man. If you're ever on the Knicks bench one day, man, that would be amazing, man. We would love to see that.
Yeah, well, I'd love to be there. So let them know that.
I'm sure, man. I'm sure. So, listen, Chucky, man, listen, we're going to let you go, man. We totally appreciate you taking the time out. You get back to your family. You have a great vacation. And, you know, hopefully we can get you on in the future to talk some more NBA again.
All right, man, anytime. Just let me know. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. The pleasure's ours, man.
All
You got it.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
What a great guy, man.
Wow. That was, he is, you want to talk about salt of the earth.
Listen, man, I you know what? I spoke to him on the phone yesterday, man, and, I was sitting there thinking, like, wow, okay, here's Chucky Brown, guy that was on the Rockets that knocked my Knicks out, you know, huge John Starks fan I am, and, I'm like, this is Chucky Brown, man, this is supposed to be my enemy, you know? But, you know, I knew Chucky was from, you know, New York, man, we're both New York products, and, once I spoke to us, I was like, wow, what an amazing person.
Yeah, he is just, I mean, that was some of the most enjoyable, I guess, athlete / celebrity kind of conversation I've ever had, truthfully.
No, it was great, man. You know what? And I spoke to a lot of people. And, let me tell you, Chucky Brown, what a great human being. He really is.
What a down-to-earth dude, man. He's cool. I mean, no filter, really, in some respects. I mean, when I say no filter, I mean, he's going to tell you exactly what he thinks. I mean, you know, he's not playing any kind of – there's no political correctness going on.
Dude,
I mean,
he's a New Yorker, man. He's like me, of course. we don't have filters in New York, man. We say how it is. You know?
Outstanding. That was great.
Yeah,
great.
It really was, man. Hopefully, man, if he comes up here, scouting some colleges in the Philadelphia area, maybe we can get him on.
Well, he's saying he does the Southeastern. I'm thinking to myself, my goodness, that is a hotbed of college basketball.
Oh, absolutely.
Smokes, he's got his hands full scouting that region.
But listen, man, you know, a guy like that with a personality like that and all that knowledge, he ain't going to stay a scout for long, man. He's definitely going to be a coach in the league one day.
I think, and you hit the question, and I actually had it written down over here on my side, too, you know, because he was saying about, he likes doing the scouting and what have you, but he didn't like the developmental league coaching. But I'm thinking to myself, you know, an assistant coach, I could see it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Listen, man, I think I'm going to have to start that petition. New York Knicks, you got an open spot in your bench. I think you need to hire Chucky Brown. Because what? What are you going to see at the end of the bench? Him, Rashid, Camby, and Kidd, they're going to be kicking it all day.
That's funny. That is funny.
Oh, man. What a great guy, man. Seriously.
Good job. Yep.
You know, all right, man. But before we get over to our next segment, Mike, we're going to talk a little bit of football here. I just want to let everybody know, Wednesday, great show. We're going to be talking about fan behavior. Friday, we're going to be joined by another former NBA player, Willie Burton.
Yep.
He's going to be with us, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff. We're going to talk about his NBA career, what he's doing now. We're also going to be talking about Educated Stars of Tomorrow, which is something that Willie's doing for all these student athletes, and it's really amazing. If you get a chance before Friday's show, check out educatedstarsoftomorrow.com, and then we'll learn more about it when Willie calls in on Friday.
Absolutely,
great.
Absolutely,
I'm like a kid again.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm looking forward to all that. I'm looking forward to Friday, and boy, if it's anything like what we just got done there with Chucky. It's well worth a listen, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. I spoke to Willie Burton yesterday, too, on the phone. Very, very nice guy. Definitely looking forward to it. But, you know, Mike, I'm sure you had more questions for Chucky, but, you know, speaking to one of my favorite role players in the NBA, man, I just couldn't stop myself.
No. Hey.
But honestly, man, it was like speaking to a longtime friend.
Listen, he's the kind of guy, I mean, when he tells you that he's going to be coming back on again, we're going to get him back on. Don't worry about that one.
Oh, absolutely, man. I know it, you know. But listen, Chucky, I got your email address and your phone number, so I might hound you to come back on a couple more times. So beware, man. All right, let's talk NFL. Good game yesterday, Mike. Probably the game of the day. Atlanta Falcons defeated the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 24-23. Falcons are now 10-1. But wow, did the Buccaneers take it to Atlanta yesterday?
This was, you're right. We were talking a little bit, taking a look over the scoreboard from yesterday, and I said, boy, the game of the day yesterday. I mean, there were a couple of them. I mean, you know, we had a couple of games going to overtime. One went on overtime on Thursday.
Yeah, but this is just a back-and-forth battle.
Yeah,
know?
But boy, the line on this game, the line on the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game was one in favor of Atlanta.
Yeah.
That was the line. When when you and I talked about it on Wednesday,
yeah,
and we were picking them, Atlanta was favored by one. So this turned out to be a push on the whole on this game. Nobody won it, you know, as far as the line went.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible game. I one of the things I said to you, and I have been looking for, and I've been waiting to see the chinks in the armor of Atlanta. And I think, you know, we're starting to see them. In the past couple of weeks, they have not looked near as, oh, I don't know, what would the word be? Sturdy, as they did earlier on in the season.
Or as dominant, yeah.
I think what we're starting to see is we're starting to see an Atlanta team that is very, very beatable. Potentially yesterday, Tampa Bay could have won this game. You know, I think the difference in it was the fact that Tampa Bay just has no rushing game whatsoever.
Yeah.
So it really was. It was an exciting game. I for one was, despite the fact that I had picked Atlanta, I was pulling for Tampa Bay to upset.
Well, I mean, you know what? They still got two touchdowns out of Doug Martin.
Yep.
You know, unfortunately, I think where it failed for Tampa Bay was Josh Freeman connecting with a wide receiver in the end zone.
Right.
You know, because the running game was going. I mean, he only had 50 yards, but he still had two touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, but unfortunately, Vincent Jackson, Underwood, Dallas Clark, they just couldn't get into the end zone and get that touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, because the Atlanta rushing is awful. You know, only 79 yards between three players, but they got two touchdowns as well.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, it's not much better.
Honestly, when we're talking about Tampa Bay saying that, you know, Freeman to one of the wide receivers was their failure, that was Atlanta's success in that 80-yard strike to Julio Jones for the touchdown.
Right.
So, you know, honestly, you always hear about games coming down to one score, but this game came down to one play.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
Again, man, I mean, Matt Ryan looked phenomenal. 353 yards, 26 to 32, 110 quarterback rating.
Yes.
Only sacked once, but he looked great. But so did Josh Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but Freeman's coming into his own, isn't he?
And that's a Tampa Bay team that I think, you know, a lot of people have kind of dismissed a little bit. And you should. I mean, when you take a look at their record. But they're a surprising team that, you know, you're starting to see glimmers of potentially the future.
Yeah.
But I think
they're growing.
They really need to address a ground game. That's really where Tampa Bay.
They got Doug Martin. Guy's a really good running back. What they need is a backup running back because, you know, 21 carries for Martin with nobody else spelling him. You know, that's not keeping him off the field, you know, to try to get fresh and to rejuvenate to get back in there.
Right.
You know, you look at Atlanta, Jacquizz Rodgers, Michael Turner. They're running back and forth. They're sharing the splits. Doug Martin all by himself with nobody else touching the ball. I mean, that's terrible.
21 carries, 50 yards. Dude, that's only a 2.4 average.
Yeah.
Something's got to be done to give the guy a little bit of protection. All right? Obviously, Atlanta was closing up the holes for this guy.
Absolutely.
So he wasn't getting anywhere at a 2.4 average. Yeah, he got the two touchdowns. That's fine. I believe both of those were what, goal line or red zone?
Not sure. I know he had a 10-yard.
1 yard. He had a 1 yard run. Two 1 yard runs. So
yeah.
They were both goal line. Yeah, okay. That's fine. Obviously, you're going to run the ball when you get the ball on the 1 yard line.
You know, fullback, you have to get the offensive line moving in. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they're
phenomenal running back, so you can't put the blame on him for that one. But you can put it on the running game. So.
I think Tampa Bay is a team that's up and coming. Of course, I said that about Detroit last year, too. Ha! Huh.
Yeah, but you know what, man? Just take a look at this, too. If they did not sign Vincent Jackson, where would they be right now?
Yeah.
Because Freeman to Vincent Jackson has looked amazing this season.
I agree.
You know, yesterday, 5 receptions, 96 yards for Vincent Jackson again. I don't think that hasn't been a game this season. He's almost 1,000 yards in now, receiving with 7 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's really, making this Tampa Bay team look even better. But look, Rondé Barber, man, how old is he now? Like 50?
I was gonna say, you know, I'm seeing him out there running around, and
he got another interception yesterday.
Yeah, honestly.
62 tackles, 1 forced fumble, and 4 interceptions on the year for Rondé Barber.
Let me just see something here. I was just looking to see what his age is, just for the fun of it.
Yeah, 37, 16.
There you go.
The NFL now.
Wow.
How amazing is that? Because you don't see many players doing a 16-year career.
No.
In the NFL. Some of them, you know, average maybe 6 years in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy, man.
Well, yeah. My brother called in the other day, and he was talking about Gonzalez, over on the other side, Atlanta Falcons. He's got 16 years, tight end. He's got 16 years in the NFL.
One year younger than Rondé Barber.
Yes.
But yeah,
yes.
Tony Gonzalez looks like he's about 52.
Yep. So. Yep, yep. But, you know, my brother was pointing out, I mean, what a phenomenal season he has had with Atlanta this year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Listen, you know what? Has Tony Gonzalez ever had a terrible season?
You know, great point. You know, that's a good one.
368 yards.
And you know something? Has always done it rather quietly.
Yeah.
You know, that was the thing that I was pointing out on Friday.
Yeah. I mean, listen, that guy is a phenomenal football player.
Yep.
No matter which way you look at it, you know, and – I hate to say it, but Kansas City should have never, ever got rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Ever. You know, not that they have a good quarterback in Kansas City, but still. You know, this is a guy that deserves to retire with the team that he helped make.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But, man, listen, you know what? In his 16-year career, he's had only he went only over 100 receptions once,
mm-hmm.
and he only scored double-digit touchdowns three times. And yet, he's still one of the best tight ends to ever play the game. Amazing.
You got it.
Amazing.
You got it. Well, we got a football game tonight, huh? Everybody tuning into that big one?
Oh, that listen, man, that is going to be an action-packed game. It's going to be so action-packed that I'm not even going to tune in.
Well, I got to tell you something, though, John, and I'll just bring it up real quick, just as kind of a sidebar, because we can come back and talk about it, you know, on the in the aftermath on Wednesday. The side story on this, is, of course, the game is being played in Philadelphia at the Link, and we're talking about the game that will be played tonight on Monday Night Football, and that's the Carolina Panthers at the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
This is a Monday Night Football game, and, of course, the rumors flying around Philadelphia have been that John Gruden potentially could be the next coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, there you've got John Gruden up there broadcasting the game along with Mike Tirico, and the big concern is whether the fans are going to actually be screaming and cheering, you know, we want Gruden, you know, and the whole anti-Andy Reid movement that's going on right now amongst the fan base. Might be worth tuning in just to see how that's all going to fall out.
Yeah. It's, you know, Reid's going. I'm sorry, Reid's going.
Of course.
A couple of coaching changes this offseason. Reid's definitely going to be one of them, and I like the guy. I think he's an amazing defensive coordinator. He's just not a good head coach. I hope Rex Ryan is one of them as well.
I would agree with you. I think it might do your Jets a real bit of good to take a good hard look at that. Now, you know, it's interesting because Rex's name really has not been brought up on the short list of cuts. Huh. You know, although it almost seems like since, about week four, Andy's name has been on the short list of cuts, along with people like North Turner and Jason Garrett. But I frankly think that Rex should be placed on that list.
Oh, no, he should be. He absolutely should be. There is no, you know, question about it that he should be on that list.
But, I don't think there's – I think there's a little doubt here in the Philadelphia region that Andy's probably going to be walking away. You know, I don't see how Jeffrey Lurie can possibly even – there's no way he could – the public relations to even keeping him would be disastrous.
Yes.
So there's little choice here. I think the more, I guess, maybe awkward situation is the fact you're going to have John Gruden in the house.
Yeah.
That's awkward.
Yeah. It's going to happen.
So.
Definitely going to happen.
That'll be the Monday night game tonight.
Yeah. I mean, it's really not going to be anything good today, you know, tonight, so – I mean, if you think it's going to be good, I mean, have a blast, but it's honestly not going to be a good game tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, you know what? Let's talk hockey, Mike. It's been a while since we really spoke NHL. You know, we got this one story coming off of USA Today by Josh Brown and Josh Cooper today that you sent me earlier today, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
NHL lockout is taking its toll on Nashville businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on days when the Predators should be playing – you know, a lot of their businesses are hurting.
I mean,
and they're hurting bad. And this is something that we've spoke about where, you know, the NHL lockout is not really hurting the players or the owners. It's hurting the small people. It's hurting the fans. It's hurting the mom and pop businesses.
It's the ripple down. It's the ripple down effect.
It really is. Now you have restaurants and bars in these NHL cities that are really hurting right now for business, and you know, these are the places that would be playing NHL games right now, having NHL fans coming to watch and pay money for food, for drinks and whatnot. And that's it. I mean, they're just losing out on all of that money.
And who are the ones that they're highlighting that are getting hurt the most are the small market teams that were hurting anyhow to begin with. You know, so, you know, much of what this whole, you know, we talked about the small market teams and how they have impacted in on the negotiations to begin with the NHL and the NHLPA.
Yeah.
And who are the ones that are getting hurt immediately as a result of this? The small market teams, the Nashvilles, I would suspect Columbus, I would suspect Phoenix, I would suspect perhaps maybe New Jersey.
Yeah.
These are the smaller market teams that we have been talking about all through the whole process, and who are the ones that are getting hurt first and with the greatest impact? The small markets.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's sickening, and I feel terrible for these small businesses. And you know what? There's even big businesses that are being hurt by this.
Sure.
You know, that's the sad part. I mean, there's, you know, I don't know what else to say anymore, because it's just everybody is being pulled by this chain, by the NHL, and it's, listen, it's not going to end good, Mike. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we spoke weeks ago where you said, well, the fans are still going to come back, everybody's going to come back, but the longer this keeps going like this, where everybody's chains are just being jerked, you know what? I'm not so sure anymore.
Well, and you know, it's been during this holiday break and what have you that, you know, here comes the next level of cancellations. You know, I think you and I are both a little bit, we've gotten weary of even addressing it, but I believe it was on Friday that it came down from the NHL that, of course, now games are being canceled through what? The middle of December, and of course now the All-Star weekend has been canceled, so that's going to directly hit Columbus in the pocketbook.
Yes.
Columbus, as we know, we were talking to Dan Hynote when we had him on a number of weeks ago. They were the whole city of Columbus was looking forward to that event.
Yeah.
They couldn't wait for it. They knew it was going to be money coming into the city. That it was an economic issue. You know, it was going to help them out. And now, you know, there they are. They're sitting. You know, no Christmas for Columbus.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we're. You know, the long-term effect of all of this.
It's sickening.
It's grotesque. It really, it has gotten to a level of grotesque.
Yeah, big time. Big time, you know. But out of it comes something good. You know, this weekend we had the this game put together, and who said Flyers and Rangers players can't get along great? Scott Hartnell of the Flyers and New York Rangers center Brad Richards organized a charity game yesterday called Operation Hattrick. It was at Boardwalk Hall in Atlantic City, and they were raising money for Hurricane Sandy victims. And Team New York beat Team New Jersey 10-6.
Uh-huh.
Rangers goalie Henrik Lundqvist, 57 saves, Mike.
Yeah, yep.
In this charity contest yesterday.
Yep. Yep.
There was a sellout crowd of over almost 11,000 people. Of hockey-starved fans.
Well, you know, you gotta. In some respects, you got a lot of players right now that are sitting off on the sidelines, waiting for this whole situation to get resolved. You know, if it ever gets resolved, and you gotta give them props in some respects for, you know, taking up the cause and going out and pulling something like this together. It was actually a pretty good situation. And props to them. I mean, you know, look, you're not doing anything anyhow. Might as well go out and raise a little bit of money. To help the situation out following the disaster of Sandy.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because, you know what, you look at the crowd yesterday, the crowd kept chanting, we want hockey, and then they also started chanting of Gary Bettman's firing.
Yep, yep.
From the NHL, but then, you know, all of the players yesterday, they met with Donald Fair to get an update on the negotiations, and Donald Fair said, and I'm going to quote this now from this Yahoo article, when you make a move towards them, if you're going to have an agreement, somebody has to say yes, and now I can do this. Instead, they said more or less yes, and what else can you do for me? Right. Everybody understands that negotiation is a process. So far, we seem to be the only people doing the negotiating. So he's saying that the NHLPA are the only ones doing the negotiating. The NHL and the owners are not doing no negotiating at all.
You know, look, Fair's got his own platform, and I got it, okay? Let's put it this way. And, I'm going to speak like a fan for a moment, with which I am. I think we've all gotten tired of the rhetoric on both sides.
Yes.
The bottom line is this. This situation is not going to get resolved until there is a mediator. We need an arbitrator to get in here. Now, the problem's going to be, how are they going to decide on who the arbitrator is going to be? That's the only thing that's going to do this. Fair can make all the statements he wants, and that's all fine and good. And we could sit there and pat him on the back.
Yes.
But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm sick of his crap, too.
I'm sick of everybody. Like I said, Bettman and Fair both need to go. I'm sorry. As heads of the people that they are going for, there needs to be some sort of good faith and communication going on between them.
And you're not going to get...
For the good of the league, as well as the people that they are hired to fight for.
And I don't think we're going to get good faith until we actually have an independent arbitrator sitting down between these two and saying, shut the hell up, this is the way it's going to be.
I agree. And we spoke about that a couple weeks ago. I do agree that there needs to be an independent arbitrator called on to get this done. You know,
now, how does that process go? You know, that's the whole thing.
That's exactly, well, yeah.
Who's going to be the one to step in and say, all right, we're mandating now that an arbitrator has to be there. And then, you know, who's going to mandate who that arbitrator is?
Yeah.
I mean, when is enough enough? Yeah. I guess that's the point.
Well.
And I hate to sound so trite about it, but that's really the bottom line. And there's the frustration coming out, is when is enough enough?
Well, let me ask you this, Mike. With all these small mom-and-pop businesses really hurting because of this, I mean, you know, just throwing this out there, is there any chance that a state or even a government gets involved in something like this eventually?
Well, I called on it the other week, and I said, you know, I am completely not in favor of our government getting involved in situations like this. But, you know, I don't know.
But if they come to the aid of the small people that are not being thought of,
well,
they gain good points, especially when voting comes around.
Sure, but now you're pulling up a dangerous precedent. I mean, I would prefer to rest on something that already exists or a case that already might be out there. I mean, could the National Labor Relations Board get involved in this? How about that? Is there a case someplace? Is there a precedent for the NLRB to get involved in this?
Yeah. I don't know, man. Something's got to happen, and something's got to happen soon. But
see, you know, we're walking on a situation where we're actually talking about entertainment versus something that is vital. It's not a vital service. Now, of course, you know, go tell that to the folks in Nashville or in Columbus that it's not a vital service. Those businesses that need the income.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
I don't know, Mike. Whatever. We're both pissed about it.
Yeah, well,
I'm sure a lot of other people are too. So what are you gonna do? You know?
Yeah.
We just keep updating it as it comes along, and hopefully something good comes out of it. Soon. All right, Mike, we got 2 minutes left in the show. We got to do our plugs here. As always, check out Frat House Mike, our very own Mike McShane, and our fill-in co-host sidekick over there at frathousesports.net.
Yep.
Head over there, read the great content, check out 5 minutes at the Frat House, and as always, check out the Beat the Shark contest featuring the lovely ladies of the Lingerie Football League. And where can you check that out? At Fan Junkies, www.fanjunkies.net. Sports interaction for all fans. It's 100% free. Not sure if you're listening while you haven't signed up yet, but get over there and sign up. It's a Facebook for sports fans. That's all this is, and it's great. Wednesday show, we're going to be talking about fan behavior in sports. Friday, former NBA player Willie Burton is going to join us. And once again, thank you to former NBA player and current New Orleans scout Chucky Brown for joining
us.
Amazing human being. We hope to have him on in the very near future again. And for Mike McShane, I'm Jonathan Ragus. Thanks for listening to Fan Junkies Radio, and we'll see you all Friday.
Talk to you Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday, excuse me.
Maybe you're a 49ers fan in Jacksonville or a Jets fan in Houston, and you're looking to connect with fellow fans from hundreds or thousands of miles away. Look no further than FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net is a social networking site dedicated to fans of every team and every league. Connect with baseball, football, basketball, and hockey fans from throughout the country and throughout the world. Get the latest news, take polls, and interact in live chats on game day. And best of all, it's absolutely free to join. Sign up today at FanJunkies.net. FanJunkies.net, where sports meets social networking.